has 5% of the world's population and 30% of the world's automobiles, but the country contributes 45% of the world's automotive emissions of the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide.
I don't even know how many miles it gets to the gallon.
Earlier, we heard from James Lovelock, the controversial scientist who thinks that we should. At age 90, he intends to toss a pile of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere just so he can be a space tourist. But Lovelock has been wrong as much as he's been right. Thanks for raising our awareness of Gaia, the urge of living things to work together for life. And thank you for the tool that showed micropoisons in the atmosphere, like chlorofluorocarbons. But Lovelock totally misjudged these CFCs that damaged the ozone hole so badly. He admits his mistake on a great Radio Adelaide broadcast on July 7, 2007.
And I thought of this idea, well, if I measure these CFCs in the air during this voyage, it would be a way of measuring how much the air in the northern hemisphere mixes with the air in the southern hemisphere, which is one of the things all the geophysicists wanted to know. Because we knew how much was being released into the northern hemisphere, so it was a simple calculation to work out from the ratio of the concentrations just how much mixing was going on in the atmosphere. So I set off on this ship, measured them all the way right down and back again, and published it as a little paper in Nature. I made the biggest boo-boo in my life, because at the beginning of the paper I stated, these substances represent no conceivable danger. And I was thinking of the from a poisonous point of view, because a lot of people in those days were so frightened of anything with chlorine in. I was sure that the moment I wrote the paper, somebody would be saying, but there's chlorine in the atmosphere, we'll all get cancer from breathing. And of course, that's sheer nonsense. But I didn't realize, of course, that what happened to them when they got in the stratosphere and the way that they destroyed ozone. But two very competent chemists in America, Molina and Rowlands, saw my paper and realized that these substances might be a source of free chlorine in the stratosphere, and that would destroy ozone.
A boo-boo?
Take a look at these people, Alex. They lived half their lives with no ozone layer.
Lovelock fails to add that he testified to Congress for the chemical industry for big money. His testimony may have delayed action on CFCs and damaged the ozone hole. It took a decade of protests, people hanging themselves from buildings and blocking railway cars and fighting on, to bring the world governments to CFC banning action in 1987 with the Montreal Protocol. In fact, Lovelock's career is festooned with serious errors. He advocated tearing down Britain's hedgerows for industrial farming, wiping out many native bird and animal species. He's pushed dangerous nuclear power while fighting against clean wind energy. And he lulls activism to sleep with statements like this, also from Radio Adelaide.
Don't take the IPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's models, too seriously. I think they're the best that scientists can do at the moment, but what they show is that the more CO2 goes in the air, the higher the temperature gets, and they're predicting by the end of the century it may go up as much as 8 degrees Celsius, which would be pretty devastating if that's the average for the whole planet. We really would be in trouble. But if you look back on the Earth's history, you find times when accidentally large amounts of carbon dioxide went into the atmosphere, and when that happened, the temperatures didn't rise up right to 8 degrees. They leveled off at about 5 degrees up and stabilized again and remained regulated there. And the last event of that kind was 55 million years ago, and when it happened, most of the Earth went to desert, like the Great Australian Desert, but it was okay up in the Arctic, and life had time to move up there. It may have been okay in the Antarctic in those days too, but we don't have too much evidence about that. But it stayed up in those northern and southern regions until it cooled off again. But it took 200,000 years to cool. So there's no great extinction. Life went up there and then moved back again. And the same, I think, will happen again.
Except that there may be some extinctions nonetheless. we, for instance, could be victims, or will we survive?
We'll survive. We're one of the toughest animals on Earth. And so will Gaia. The whole system survives. So it's not all bad, but it's a pretty rough event. But on the other hand, don't forget, we've been, as a species, on the planet for nearly a million years now, and there have been 7 incidents nearly as bad as that during that million years. And that's every time we move from an ice age to an interglacial like now. There's a temperature rise about the same as will happen this century. And we've survived through all of that, so I reckon we'll survive through this one. But there will be an enormous cull if as much as 20% of us remain after 2100, we'll be lucky. Similarly, if you look back in the Earth's past history, you find that it went through hot spells many times in the past. The one we know best about took place 55 million years ago, when the Arctic Ocean became so warm as to be tropical. But life persisted. It had time to move up there, nearly all of it, so there was no great extinction. And when the Earth cooled off again, and it took 200,000 years, life moved back again and re-inhabited the Earth. I think that this is very much something that may lie before us.
Yes, climate shifts have happened many times before and life adapted, but at least 5 times previously. Life adapted by mass extinctions beyond anything we've ever known. The climate change he describes also developed over hundreds, if not thousands of years, giving the species time to adapt, maybe even to evolve. There has never been a species like us that could haul massive amounts of concentrated solar energy out of the ground as fossil fuels. And worse yet, James Lovelock fails to tell the audience that where we've found evidence of relatively fast climate shifts, say up to 5 degrees Celsius in a decade or so perhaps, it was from a very cold period, an ice age, to a warmer period, like the interglacial period that we now inhabit. But this time, we're moving from a warm interglacial into a hothouse world way too fast. James Lovelock is 90, famous and wealthy and ready to push off. He can be optimistic about a giant cull of humanity, mass death within the lifetimes of our descendants or sooner. Oh, great. So let's just give up and enjoy ourselves with another cruise ship holiday? No thanks. I've got a much better scientist role model for you and for me.
We did not realize until recently that previous warm periods, the previous so-called interglacial periods, some of which were warmer than the present one, were not very much warmer, at most 1 degree warmer than the present period. On the other hand, there were times, if we go back 3 million years ago, when the Earth was about 3 degrees warmer, but it was a different planet. There was no sea ice in the Arctic, and sea level was at least 15 meters higher, probably about 25 meters higher. That's 80 feet. I mean, that's a huge climate change. It's something that we really would have a very hard time dealing with because we've set up all of our infrastructure with the coastlines where they are now. And also, a warming that large would have a huge impact on many species. It would drive many high-latitude and high-altitude species to extinction. So we really cannot afford, we really don't want to have a climate change of anything like that magnitude.
It's James Hansen, the head of NASA, Goddard Space Institute for Space Studies in New York City, and a professor at Columbia University. Way back in 1988, he warned the U.S. government that climate change could damage our world.
What did you say to the Congress 20 years ago, and how was it received?
Well, I said that 1988 was likely to be the warmest year in the history of instrumental measurements. And I said that the Earth had entered a period of long-term warming. I could say with 99% confidence that it would continue to get warmer, and that this was almost certainly due to human-made greenhouse gases, and that this affected the probability of extreme events like heat waves and droughts. And since then, the events have proven those statements to be basically correct.
That was James Hansen speaking with the unbeatable Diane Reams of NPR in a 20-year retrospective.
Hansen on Democracy Now!
NASA's top climate scientist, James Hansen, warned on Monday the world has long passed the dangerous level for greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and that the Earth is nearing a tipping point. Hansen said, quote, "We're toast if we don't get on a very different path. This is the last chance." He also called for the government to block the construction of new coal-fired plants. During an interview on NPR, Hansen called for the chief executives of oil companies to be tried for their role in spreading disinformation on climate change.
The groups, the American Geophysical Union, the American Meteorological Society, the National Academy of Sciences, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is a United Nations international organization, all of these large panels of scientists have made very clear statements about the reality of global warming and its cause. So the of course, in the hundreds of thousands of scientists in the world, you can find a number of them which will say anything, and that gets a lot of attention because the fossil fuel industry has taken the position that it will give prominence to those contrarians. And that's one of the big problems we have, because now the public does not know that there's such a large consensus among the scientific community. Because it sounds like there's a debate, and there's really no real scientific debate. Global warming enhances both extremes of the hydrologic cycle, and that means not only heat waves and droughts and forest fires, which go with the higher temperatures at times and places where it's dry, but also at the other extreme of the water cycle, when the atmosphere is warmer, it holds more water vapor, and therefore when you get rain, you get heavier rains and larger floods. And for example, where I live near the Delaware River, we've had 200-year floods in the last 10 years. And where I used to live in Iowa, we've had 2 500-year floods in the last 15 years. Well, you can't blame any one of these events and say that's due to global warming, but you can blame the frequency and the severity of these events on as one of the impacts, expected impacts of global warming.
But it does require that we have a moratorium on any new coal-fired power plants. And over the next 25 to 30 years, we're going to have to phase out those that exist. And this is going to become very clear within the next several years. So it is just plain silly to build a new one now, because you're not going to be able to grandfather these in and say, oh, we've got it, we can keep it. It's not going to work that way. Once the government really understands how serious the problem is, these plants are going to have to go. So it just makes no sense to make another one now.
Forest fires will increase with global warming. And if you look in regions like Canada and Siberia, where there isn't a smoky bear putting out these things, we see big increases in forest fires as global warming is occurring. So there is a causal relationship. And another thing that is affecting it is with global warming, the latitudinal distribution of the overturning circulation, that means a rising motion in the tropics and subsiding motion in the subtropics, that circulation cell expands as the globe gets warmer. And it has expanded by about 4 degrees of latitude. That's about 400 kilometers. That's affecting the southern United States and the Mediterranean region, Australia, and parts of southern Africa, so that the fires you see in the southwest, in California, in the Mediterranean last year, that probably does have a relationship to global warming.
James Hansen, he's director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies.
Hansen went on to warn that there may not be any limit to the amount of global warming humans could inflict on this planet. James Lovelock, you recall, said natural systems might stop warming at 5 degrees Celsius, still enough to send us scurrying to the poles. Lovelock had no real science to suggest that anything could save us this time. Other scientists, like America's Michael Oppenheimer, aren't so sure.
What's going on now definitely is that the greenhouse gases are building up due to human activity, not due to these biological changes. And there's nothing to reverse that except us reversing emissions, nor do we know of any limit in the climate system that would stop the warming. There could be one. Maybe when we get to 4 to 5 degrees warming, there's something that happens that we don't know about. There's a lot we don't know. But, you know, we can't make policy based on a hope.
NASA's James Hansen goes further. In many speeches, he warns humans may create climate change so severe that it would create, quote, a different planet. He compares the case of Venus, the baked planet enshrouded by a carbon-loaded atmosphere. Speeches and radio EcoShock shows about James Hansen litter our website at ecoshock.org. Go ahead and listen to the man. Instead of giving up, Hansen is leading the way towards scientific activism. In this spring, he appeared at an anti-coal demonstration in Britain. This past week, he dared arrest, and possibly a wacko attack, by joining a demonstration against mountaintop removal mining, the worst kind of coal mining, in West Virginia. Let's let a native West Virginian, country music star and Grammy Award winner Kathy Mattea, describe mountaintop removal mining.
Big seams of coal in West Virginia and a lot of Kentucky have all been mined. So what's left are real thin seams, and that means strip mining. Strip mining is rampant right now, and it's raping the countryside. What if you knew that every time you flip on your light switch, a mountaintop in West Virginia just blows up? It's crazy. In these rural areas, a lot of times that is the best way to make money if you are unskilled labor, if you don't have a college degree. And so, you know, you don't have a lot of power if you want to stay on the piece of land where your family's lived for generations. It's just a lot to it. Well, I think that that's part of what we have to talk about. We have to try to get into a solution so that we can make some kind of sensible transition to cleaner power. I think there are going to be many facets to the solution. There are people doing research right now on how to burn coal cleaner. So it may not be that we have to eliminate coal. But, you know, if our appetite for energy is so big right now that we will blow up mountaintops to the point where we have strip mines in West Virginia as big as half the area of Manhattan. You know, these things, it's not just the beauty of the mountains that's lost. The Appalachian Forest is the most diverse forest in North America. So we're losing habitat, we're losing species. The sludge ponds are contaminating the water. And then when they blast off the mountaintops and push all of that dirt that is not coal into the valleys, it contaminates the water for the people who live in the area. People in West Virginia are screaming about this. And people who mine this coal are screaming about this. It is a complex problem. But if we can't discuss it because we are so married to the way things are, then we can't find our way to a solution, and we must.
Again, that clip comes from the Green Radio show Living on Earth. That broadcast was January 4th, 2008, found at loe.org. 500 mountaintops blasted away just so Minnie and Mickey can keep the TV and lights on all the time. Illegally filling up valleys with sludge and rock. It's a sign of peak coal, really, just as author Richard Heinberg suggests. Just like the Canadian tar sands, where oil gets harder and dirtier to get, the best coal seams of West Virginia are already tapped out. So Massey Energy, aided by the big Wall Street financiers, blows up the mountains to get at the thin remaining seams.
Hi, I'm James Hansen. I'm a climate researcher. I understand that we need to stop coal emissions if we're going to preserve a planet. But we need your help if we're going to stop mountaintop removal. That's the first step in saving the planet, because it not only affects global climate, but also has large effects on local populations, especially young people. Here in West Virginia, there's an impoundment located just behind an elementary school, which is very dangerous for the children there. But it's a symbol of what of the nonsense that is occurring in our energy systems, and the fact that the political system is so responsive to large energy companies while not paying attention to the needs of the people, especially young people. We need to draw attention to that. So please help us by participating in the actions, by supporting the putting pressure on Washington so that we can fix the climate problem and start at that by fixing the mountaintop removal problem.
There's no worry to Massey CEO and Black Lord of West Virginia, Don Blankenship. He doesn't believe in global warming.
I don't believe climate change is real. I do believe that the Arctic is melting and the Antarctic is getting colder. I believe it's a normal cycle.
James Hansen was charged with obstructing police officers and blocking traffic. He tried to enter the grounds of Massey Energy, but was met with a blockade allegedly formed by coal miners and their families.
This is James Hansen. He's about to give a statement. If you want to...
abused by those in position of power, and their children and their kids' futures are being damaged by those in power. It is the right of the people and their sacred duty to resist those in position of power and fight for the well-being of the young and the unborn. First, we believe that no child's health and safety are expendable for the expediency of a dirty energy source.
Actress Daryl Hannah is arrested.
First of all, to bring attention to the devastating effects of mountaintop removal, and to make a call for clean, renewable, infinite energy resources, which we have available to us now.
Is it worth it, Daryl?
Absolutely. Is it worth it? No question about it.
I have no jobs to start and say, can you go back to Hollywood?
Well, I can go to Hollywood, I can go to the somewhere.
The company crowd hooted and hollered at James Hansen and Daryl Hannah as they were arrested. Well, that video clip came from West Virginia Public Broadcasting, recorded June 23rd, 2009.
Lord, I'm so tired. If this go on,
Daddy, working in a coal mine, going down, 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 working in a coal mine, what's about to do? Down,
working
in a coal mine, going down, down, down,
working
in a coal mine, what's about to slip down?
Cause I make a little money on a coal by the ton, but when Saturday rolls around, I'm too tired for having fun.
Too tired for having, I'm just working in a coal mine. Going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine. Whoop, about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine.
Going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine. Whoop, about to slip down.
And who are those Wall Street men backing dirty coal? Well, here's one. George Soros, occasional friend of the left, takes up the coal industry on The Green Business Show, produced by Fortune magazine, June 14, 2009.
Well, George Soros has made billions by anticipating major shifts across financial markets. We're very happy to have him here with us today as he weighs in on the energy sector, specifically the coal industry. George, thanks for being here. In November of 2008, Soros Fund Management took advantage of some of the cheapest coal valuations in the last 5 years. Are you still investing in coal going forward? Are you planning to invest in coal? And why would you be doing that now when coal is coming under so much fire?
It's the coal we really hate.
The possibility of all these embargoes is just waiting in the wings.
Well,
I don't know actually what my team is doing on the course. Mm-hmm. I can't comment on whether we're buying or selling. Certainly, if you have cap and trade and clean coal, then I think coal has a future, and I wish that the coal industry understood this better, because it's really carbon tax that will put them into business.
Can you elaborate on that? Explain.
Once you take the carbon out, then coal is a viable source of energy. And in fact, it's such an important source, and it's available locally, both in America and in China and in India, so it's also energy security, that you actually can't do without it. And the other sources, like solar energy and biomass and so on, it can't grow sufficiently fast for the next 20 years to replace coal. Mm-hmm. Therefore, there's only one replacement for coal, which is clean coal. And that's the future of coal. Mm-hmm. So the coal industry in opposing it is extremely reactionary. It's like, you know, burying your head in the sand. Right now, I don't think you should be building coal plants that pollute. We should have an embargo on building new coal plants until you develop the technology mm-hmm. for taking it out. But yet, you really need to do it, because there is no substitute.
You have said publicly that you think a carbon tax would be a good thing, a step in the right direction. But then wouldn't that be advocating policies that would go against your investments with clean coal then, or coal in general?
Yeah. First of all, I'm very happy to advocate policies that go against my investments.
Okay.
I when it comes to policy, I think the public interest should prevail and not the private interest. But actually, I think that there's a great future for coal once you take the carbon out.
Check out the Radio EcoShock blog for June 25th, 2009 to find a link to that Fortune video. It's a classic, partly because all the time George is talking about clean coal. The background video is just machines moving mountains of the black stuff. The black carbon keeps moving on while money talks. Oh yeah, the little screen of figures that flashes up just for a few seconds shows Soros Fund Management LLC, Top Coal Holdings shares, Arch Coal, $482 million, Consol Energy, $12 million, as of February 2009, source, hoovers.com. George, get out of the coal business. It's killing the planet. Please, George Soros, don't kill us all off. This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. I began this program by asking if we should give up and party. You must know by now, we can't give up this rich planet and a decent life for all coming generations.
We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
But I don't think that means we can't enjoy ourselves. Feeling joy is more important now than ever. Let's feel joy about nature and about each other. Let's feel good about the people we meet in the struggle, the parties after the action, the love. Forget about James Lovelock. Let's enjoy and save the climate, too. Find all our past shows for free download at our website, ecoshock.org. Thank you for not giving up. Here is Michael Jackson.